Sci-Fi Party Line.
Welcome to another episode of Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. This is your hostess, Kat. And today, welcome back, Hanako.
Hey!
How's it been?
Been going good. Been going good. Just, right. You know, recovering, trying to get back, you know, in the swing of things.
All right. Well, the swing of things is, well, we got Supernatural. We got Vampire Diaries. We have some updates on True Blood. Oh, I'm so excited. And some Twilight talk. And maybe a little Harry Potter tidbit at the end. So we're busy today.
Yes. Busy is good.
Okay, let's start out with Supernatural. It had its finale last week. And were you expecting it to end that way?
Yes and no. I kind of prepared myself for anything with this series. Was not expecting Dean to, you know, go into the, as Sam called it, the apple pie life, with Sam kind of being on the outskirts. But I liked the way it ended. I know there are some people who were kind of disappointed with the way that it ended. And I know a lot of people felt like it was a series finale.
It was.
But I think it just kind of, it just kind of once and for all wrapped up that whole apocalypse you know, arc, and just kind of preparing us for what we might see in season six. I'm really excited to see where they're going to, I mean, where do you go once you kick the devil's ass, you know?
Well, so, Sam came back. And so we don't know what that means. And I don't know if they added that after they knew they were getting renewed, or was that always supposed to end that way?
I really don't know. I literally have not had a chance to catch up with all of the articles and all of the reviews that have been written about the show. But I don't know. I would like to think that they probably added that after they decided on season six. Mm-hmm. Although at the same time, it would have seemed kind of weird to just end the show with just Dean. I don't know. The show kind of, you know, but at the same way, it's fitting. The show started with Sam, you know, all the way back in the pilot episode. It started with Sam, you know, living his life, being happy with Jessica. And I guess it would have been kind of a fitting end for, you know, for us to see that kind of normal life for Dean.
Yeah, you know that's not going to last. You know, that's not going to last at all. I found it kind of disturbing that John Winchester did not make an appearance at all. If this was the series finale, and if this was the last of everything, him not coming back really let me down.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed in that, too. But, hey, you know, season six, you know, we might hopefully get to see him in some way.
I was reading some articles, and they said, well, you know, he's busy with this and that and all these other things and movies, and he's just never coming back.
Yeah, like big movie. Now.
Yeah, and I was like, wow, man, come on, you can't be like that, you know?
I honestly think if the story was right and he was able to do it, I don't think he'd hesitate to do it. You know, any interviews that I've read with him, he's always had, you know, great love for the show and great love for the fans. So I think it would just be, you know, a matter of the right story, you know, the right circumstances, not bringing him back just to be bringing him back.
Yeah.
You know, so
like we said last time, I really want him to be God.
Yeah, about that.
I really want him to be God, but it's just, I mean, we still don't know who God is at that point. I really thought
Did
when
Chuck
Castiel
not throw you for a loop.
What now?
Did Chuck not throw you for a loop? I think everybody's jaw dropped when he just vanished into thin air.
Oh, maybe he's God.
I don't know. I've read theories that he might be God. I've read theories that he might be Jesus.
Castiel kind of came off as Jesus when he came back, and then he started healing people. So he was kind of Jesus-y, if you can say that or anything.
But. Yes, and the whole Mistress Magda.
Who was that?
You remember when Dean called him and he answered the phone thinking that it was someone named Mistress Magda?
Oh. Well,
I, uh, I read in an article a couple of days ago where someone was making that that comparison with him to Jesus and saying, you know, maybe that that Mistress Magda was like a reference to Mary Magdalene.
Oh. Which,
you know, which I completely did not go that direction in my thinking, but I was like, oh, that's another good interest, you know, interesting theory. So who knows? I guess we'll find out once and for all somewhere in season six.
I would like to see more of him. He's a pretty funny character.
He is, and I loved the way they did his narration throughout the whole episode.
It was very good. I thought it was elegant for this show, kind of.
Hmm?
I thought it was kind of elegant for this show.
It really was. I mean, it was so well done, and it just kind of, I guess it kind of gave a little bit of an everyday look to Sam and Dean that we don't see with the regular episode. So it was a really nice touch.
Mm-hmm. And how he made the car, the Impala, magical almost.
Yes, I love that. It was, I mean, Impala is like such a big part of the show. I mean, it's like the third top billing star, if you will. I just loved it. It was so nice. And then, you know, for the Impala and the memories connected with it to be kind of like the catalyst for Sam to kind of take his body back from Satan. That was just, it was wonderful. It was very well done. That episode was top notch from start to finish.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not going to skip over the fact that Bobby is walking again. That was a very rewarding thing that it happened kind of fast. I thought it was going to be very heroic or something, but just to see him get up and start walking again, it's like, thank God, you know, get him out of there.
Yeah, well, maybe not thank God, thank Crawley, but
Crawley.
But yeah, I was not expecting that touch, and especially not coming from a demon, but it worked.
Yeah.
I liked it. I liked it. It was different. It was Bobby being, you know, in a situation where, I mean, for much of the last season, we've had to hear, you know, them go so hard on Sam for trusting the demon and look where it got him. And then turns around, you know, the last half of this season, Dean and Bobby both had to be put in that position. And, you know, it's kind of like looking in the mirror. Okay, now I'm in this position where I may have to trust the demon in order to get things done. What do I do? And, you know, it was a nice way of, you know, turnabout is fair play, you know, I think. And it went a long way to showing them, okay, you know what, Sam made some bad decisions, but he's matured and he's, you know, taking charge, you know, trying to get this done, trying to finish and, you know, correct his wrongs or whatever the case may be. But
made the ultimate sacrifice for it.
Yes.
Yeah, so him and the brother.
So, yeah.
What is his name? Adam.
Yes.
Yeah, so I wasn't really sure what they were going to do with Adam. I thought that because Adam became the vessel for Michael, that Adam was going to die straight out. So we still really don't know what happened to Adam because, you know, now you have Sam at the end of the whole thing walking around. So we don't know if Adam's gone for sure or not.
Yeah. They could have always brought him back, and then that would be, I guess that would be kind of weird because now that would mean he'd have to, you know, kind of acknowledge and deal with these brothers that he never knew while he was alive, because he didn't find out any of this stuff until after he was dead.
Which is ridiculous.
Having him. So that'll be a kind of interesting, you know, take if they decide to bring him back next season.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know where this story can go. I suspect that they're going to deal more with God. I've read that they're going to deal more with the Dean-Sam relationship, which, you know, don't go too hardcore on that because that can get a little whiny. But I was really impressed when they brought in the gods like Loki, Kali, Ganesh, Mercury, you know, Samity. I love that. I wish they, I mean, it felt a little, you know, Stargate, old.
Yeah, it did. But also it kind of, and in the same way, it kind of went back to like the first couple of seasons when they were mostly dealing with the urban legends and dealing with, you know, things that were, you know, based on myths and stuff. So, you know, I've heard a lot of talk that they may be going back to a similar premise as far as like season one, going back on hunts and stuff like that, which would be really fun to see, because as much as I enjoyed the whole apocalypse and the angels versus demons thing, it did get a little, you know, there were some times when I was like, oh my, you know, kind of like Sam, remember when we used to hunt, just hunt Wendigos? And it's like, I just want to see a good old fashioned hunt every now and again.
Because then we'll get more comedy, you know, the more wacky episodes, which I really liked.
Yes.
And I like the overreaching arc of everything, but the good old funny ones, and just where they, like you said, the good old fashioned legend, urban legend hunts were really good. They were really good. So, well, the guys only have a contract for 6 years, and I've read that Padalecki said that he has no interest after his contract is up, so I don't think that there'll be a season 7.
I kind of agree with that, because it was always destined that the show was going to go for 5 seasons. Kripke had the story that he wanted to tell within 5 seasons. And I'm kind of glad that they did extend it for a 6th season, because I don't think I would have been ready to let go of it yet. But at the same time, you don't want it to be one of these shows like, say, The Heroes or The Lost, where everybody's like, okay, you know what, can we please be done with this now? You know? And it's like, I don't even watch those two shows. All I have to do is look at people's Facebook statuses and tweets, and I'm like, oh, I don't think I want to get into this now.
Heroes was canceled, so you don't have to worry about that.
I know, and you know, I'd rather them decide, okay, you know what, we had a good run, we told a good story, let's go out on top, as opposed to people getting tired and falling out of love with the show and basically, you know,
trashing
just
it.
Yeah, I really wouldn't want to see that happen to this show, because this show has endured a lot. I mean, from the first few seasons where nobody knew if the show was going to get picked up for a second or a third season, and you know, there was just really this small fan base that kind of kept it going, and literally by word of mouth, it has grown tremendously.
Yeah.
And, you know, not too many shows can say that, you know, to have that kind of ferocious, you know, fan base, to where, I mean, these fans support this show. They support these actors and the music and the musicians that had, you know, have come through this show. And I would hate for that to kind of get tainted by, you know, just the show becoming mundane or whatever the case is. You know?
Yeah. I heard that the fans were responsible for making Castiel a regular because of fan support.
I'm pretty sure that is the case, because once he got in, the fans can kind of, I won't say they control who stays and who goes, but CW and the writers, they do listen to the fans as far as, you know, opinions on what they think works and what they think doesn't. And I would say that is probably very true. Cass has I think the
awesome.
First half season that he was there, I don't think I can ever remember a character getting such support so quickly.
Yeah.
You couldn't help but love him.
I didn't understand him at first. I was just like, okay, yeah, an angel, whatever. But he really grew on me. His dry wit just really hits the mark. And he wasn't that handsome at first to me, but you know, as you get to know him and you see him, I was like, oh my God, he's really handsome.
Yeah. So, and then just Misha Collins, who portrays, if you follow him on Twitter, his humor is the same. It's hilarious. So it's now you put this personality with this character, and you can kind of understand a little bit the character a little bit better, because you see what the actor does. It's just, you look at him in a totally new light, because you're like, okay, you know what? There's going to be somebody remarking something about this on Twitter, and he's going to come back with some crazy, retarded, you know, comeback, and it's just, it works.
Wasn't he in the middle of that whole Lucifer is coming hashtag on Twitter thing?
Yes,
what
he was.
What was that about? I kind of missed that. I think I was in Mexico or something, but what was that?
Okay, when, I believe it was either, I think it was when the season started, for season 5, there was a hashtag, and I think it was Lucifer is coming, and, P. Diddy apparently started tweeting that Satanists were trying to take over Twitter.
Loser.
And of course, his followers started retweeting the same thing, and it just kind of got big. And so Misha Collins on Twitter, he starts making jokes about, okay, well, you know, we need to take P. Diddy down. We need to show him. And it's like, at the same time, once the fans are realizing what's going on, I mean, we went through a whole, I guess, a couple of weeks where every time we put a hashtag up and it was trending, it almost immediately that trending topic would disappear from Twitter.
Because Twitter was, they intervened, right?
Apparently, or something. We don't know what it was. I mean, hey, maybe it was Satan trying not to be on everybody's radar. I don't know. But, I mean, the whole thing was just so hilarious because then the Supernatural fans, of course, oh, you're trying to shut us up? Oh, let us louder. So it was a very fun time to be on Twitter and be a Supernatural fan because just the responses from the different fans and the stars, and, oh, God, it was hilarious. It was, I mean, and it got to the point where a couple of news outlets reported on it.
Oh, my God.
That is crazy. It was hilarious. It was the funniest thing. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm a Satanist now. because we're
well,
all
you do read Harry Potter.
Because we were using the hashtag, but when we use the hashtag, of course, we're referencing the show.
Yeah.
Lucifer is coming Thursday, you know, 9 o'clock on the CW, watch Supernatural, and how they just took the hashtag and just completely ignored everything else, I have no idea. But, you know, that's what happens when people kind of leap before they look.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
It was a fun time. It really was.
All right, well, we are going to move, unless you have anything that you want to say, anything else about Supernatural that you want to bring up.
No, it's awesome. I can't wait for season 6.
Okay. We are going to go straight into Vampire Diaries. This show was a surprise to me. I thought it was just going to be something that wasn't going to really catch on. Because, you know, I liked it initially, and I was going to keep up with it, but I didn't know if everybody else was going to like it. But everybody is really responding well to this show.
It started out for me good. I mean, I watched it at the beginning mostly out of curiosity. I just wanted to how they were going to do it. And, you know, when I found out there was going to be a show, I went and I read the first 4 books in the series and, you know, just some of the synopsis that I read online about the show. I was like, okay, they're changing it a little bit from the book. So I'll just see, you know, how it is. And I'm thinking it's going to be some little cheesy teen sexed up, you know, just
Gossip Girl with vampires.
Yeah, that's the thing. So I watched the first episode and I was like, okay, it doesn't seem so bad. And then once Ian Somerhalder walked on screen, it got a little bit more interesting with the whole evil brother, I'm out to make your life miserable. And, you know, that got a little interesting. And just as the episodes kept coming, that it got better and better. And by the end of the season, it literally has become one of those shows where, you know, I mean, Vampire Diaries and Supernatural has pretty much locked my Thursday nights. I mean, I try not to schedule classes on Thursday nights. I try not to do anything on Thursday nights. People know, unless I'm on Twitter tweeting about it, don't call me between hours of 8 and 10. I mean, those two shows have literally pretty much topped my must-see TV list. I don't do anything on Thursday nights just in front of the TV.
Oh, God, I used to be like that with X-Files. Man, I used to schedule everything around that show. So let's talk about Damon a little bit. He's changing.
He has somehow,
some way, turned on half emotions or something. And it's not that I don't like it. Kind of do. But it's weird.
It is weird, but I do like it. because I think it kind of makes things a little more interesting, because you know which way he wants to go, but at the same time he's fighting that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of weird to watch him play that dynamic. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think with Catherine's return, we may see a little bit, we may see a little different Damon.
Emo Damon.
I don't even want to say emo Damon. We might see a more vengeful Damon.
Oh, you think he might just go in the other direction all the way?
I think he might be pissed, you know?
Yeah, that does make more sense. That makes more sense.
You know, found out that Catherine has not been in this tomb, that she's been, you know, traveling the world and turning vamps and just having a good old time and just completely, you know, left them out in the cold. And I think it's going to get, I think also with his jealousy of Stefan, you know, the whole, it was only supposed, not even with Elena, with the whole Catherine thing, because initially it was just supposed to be him and Catherine. But apparently Catherine's love for Stefan was so great that she decided she didn't want to live without either one of them. And that's kind of the basis of...
Well, could you blame her?
No, I couldn't.
But I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Both of them are hot. If I can have them both, I'd do it.
Yeah, but you know, nothing good ever comes from greed, so...
No, well, you're right. Well, we see that.
Yeah.
I really can't wait.
I think her coming back... You know, and I think there's going to be like a little bit of a control issue with her, because she's going to see Stefan with Elena, mm-hmm. and see that he's happier with her than he ever was with Catherine. And even though Damon is going to be there, and Damon is pretty much the, oh, you are my everything, I think she's going to have a problem with that. And as a result of that, I think Damon's going to have an issue with the whole scene. So I don't know. I think vengeful Damon is getting ready to make a comeback.
Well, I can't wait to see the moment that he realized that he was actually kissing Catherine, because when I realized it, I was like, oh snap! You know, honestly, it was just
one of my friends pointed out on that night. I think he may have already realized that on the porch. I went back to look at the episode a second time, and after Catherine was back in the house, you see Damon kind of turn and, you know, look at the door with this strange look, and he kind of touches his lips like, okay, that kiss felt familiar. So I think he might realize
that she's that.
Yeah, I didn't either. My friend Tina mentioned it, and I said, you know, I didn't realize that, but I went back to look at it a second time, you know, looking specifically for that, you know, towards the end. And I was like, oh, wait, maybe he does know she's back. So I think he has an idea.
Wow, that is interesting. Oh, my God. Okay, let's go. Founders Day took forever, but it's finally here. I mean, my God, they prepped for that thing the whole season. And finally, we got Founders Day, and it was like a vampire massacre, which was going to be a whole town massacre. But they got the little invention that was supposed to be deactivated, but wasn't. And they got vampires, put them in a basement, tried to burn them to death. Comes to find out that the mayor and his son, what was the mayor's name? I wrote his name down and I forgot. Mayor.
Lockwood.
And Tyler Lockwood, that they were affected by this vampire invention. Mm-hmm. And but they were not vampires. My suspicion is that they're werewolves. Can you confirm or deny?
According to the books, yes, they are.
Okay, spoiler alert. After we'd already said it.
They kind of set that up, because when they were talking about the device, I think if I remember correctly, they made sure to say that it's a device that's not where the sound can't be picked up by human ears. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how they kind of left that open to interpretation, because they didn't just say that it affects vampires. They just, you know, they kind of specified humans can't hear it. They didn't say vampires and other, you know, just vampires or vampires and other supernatural creatures. Mm-hmm. So I think they kind of...
It was a surprise, you know, to me, because the vampires were the ones that were so excited about this thing. And, you know, they were just just crazy about finding it and destroying it or owning it and possessing it. And, you know, I thought it would have done more, like kill the vampires. All it did was kind of hurt their ears, and that was a little disappointing.
Yeah, it kind of, well, Bonnie said that it was a weapon. So not necessarily a weapon to kill, but a weapon to kind of disorient them, to you know, kind of give the humans or whoever a chance to disable them, which, you know, worked really well, but also really, really sucked because now Anna's dead. And I just, you know, my husband said, you know, he just needs to stop hanging out with dead chicks, you know. First Vicky, now Anna. And, you know, when Anna first got on the scene, I didn't quite like her character because I felt she was kind of shady anyway. And then just kind of as she, you know, she grew on me. So I was really, really sad to see her, you know, get staked. That kind of hurt me. And then
it was so final. I mean, they just killed her mom, you know, and now she's gone. And I didn't understand the purpose for him going to her specifically and staking her while the other ones just burned. And that was it. It was just really vindictive, in my opinion.
I think it may have had to do with the fact that he realized that Jeremy was in love with her. And Jeremy knew what she was and didn't care. I think that pretty much was John's whole MO. You know, he's trying to get rid of all these vampires, yet all these vampires are connected to him and his family so intricately. I mean, he fathered Elena with Isabel, who turned out, who, you know, got changed into a vampire, and Elena's in love with the vampire, and now Jeremy's in love with the vampire, and it's just, I just think I was probably like, okay, the only way I can get these things out of my life, I need to eliminate them. You know, he's just trying to control the whole situation, the vampire population, what's going on with his family.
A little too late, you know, too late in this, because now Jeremy committed suicide and drank Anna's blood. Yeah. What is that supposed to do again? I forgot.
Okay, basically, he has to die with vampire blood in his system in order to turn into one.
Oh.
So that's why he drank the blood first, then, you know, took the pills. Which, of course, I guess that can be left open for interpretation because we didn't actually see him take any of the pills. He could have just as easily tossed it and went to bed and went to sleep, just kind of, I don't know, feeling defeated or depressed. So
those are some sleep drugs, weren't they? They were like
hydrocodone. I think it was like pain medic. It was Elena's pain medication from her accident with her parents.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was pain medication.
Okay.
So you know, I think even with that, that's kind of open for interpretation because, like I said, we never actually saw him take the pills.
Well, so, he had a glass and he held one up, so, you know, maybe. I'm not hoping he does, but I think it would be interesting to see, you know, Elena now has a brother that's a vampire, and he's going to be able to turn off his feelings, which he wants to do, and I think he's going to be a bastard to deal with.
Yeah, I think so, too. And it's kind of, there's no way to speculate about Jeremy's character because, like, in the book series, Jeremy doesn't exist. Elena had a 4-year-old sister in the book series.
Oh, so they can do whatever they want with him.
Yeah.
He's kind of like Lafayette.
Yes, like Lafayette and Jessica with True Blood, because those two characters, you know, Lafayette only lasted a little while in the book series, and Jessica didn't exist at all. She's strictly a, you know, HBO character add-on. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Jeremy. And how all of this, you know, Elena, you know, his little beef with Elena now for keeping the secrets and Anna's death. And I'm pretty sure he's going to figure out that his Uncle John was the one that killed him. And then also, you know, dealing with John's death now, you know, Catherine got in and killed him. And
oh, she,
you know,
did? How did I forget that?
Oh, how did you miss that?
Oh, she cut off his fingers.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes, I remember that now. So, I guess I was just so caught up in that actually being Catherine that I just, everything else was just.
Yeah, that's why that's one of the reasons why I went back a second time, because I was like, you know, the question came up, we were watching it. My husband and my daughters, both, you know, they all watched the show with me, and even my 7-year-old son has gotten interested. Aww. So it's really funny, but yeah, my husband asked, he was like, well, how was Catherine able to get in the house? And we, you know, kind of thought about it. We said, oh, when Jenna came to the door, she told her, I think it's time for you to come in, you know, to come inside. So she got her invitation without it being, you know, they played it real seamlessly.
I did not think of that.
Mm-hmm. She got invited in when Jenna caught her kissing Damon. She said, you know, come inside. It's getting late. Inside.
Wow. And so, oh my God. And they kind of had on the same outfits and they did that so perfectly. And I didn't even could tell or anything.
Yeah.
That was really good.
Yep.
That was really good.
I think they both had on dark clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, Catherine had stolen Elena's dress and all her other things.
Yes. She wore
to the parade. So. It really wasn't a, you know, you had to really pay attention to see, okay, the hair was a little bit different.
It was, you know, after I saw.
Yeah, so they did it really well because I had no clue it was Catherine until they started showing John's ring and I was like, okay, she's about to try to get that ring. But when she cut his fingers off, I was like, oh my God, that's Catherine. How in the world did you do this? I mean, it was very well done.
Yeah, it was. Okay, Bonnie, what is she doing? Because she's emo Bonnie.
You know.
She's kind of moping around, and I want her to do more, and I'm so scared for her character.
No, I actually think that the last episode kind of showed us, I think Bonnie's going to play a bigger part in the next season. I think, you know, her character kind of has to be emo right now. You know, she lost her grandmother trying to protect these, you know, trying to help Stefan and Damon as far as the vampires and keeping them out. And, you know, she finds out, okay, Graham's died for nothing because all of the vampires got loose.
Mm-hmm.
They've started killing people and this is going on and that's going on. And then, you know, as a result of all that stuff, Stefan was in the position where he had to drink blood from Elena. And then he lapsed, and Bonnie witnessed that. And I just think it just got to the point when Bonnie witnessed Stefan attacking, what was her name? The chick from the Founders Day.
Mm-hmm. Pageant thing. Yeah,
pageant. You know, I just think for Bonnie, that was just kind of, okay, you know what? I liked him. He was someone I considered a friend, and yet he's able to do this. He can't control it. So
she straight up threatened him too.
Yeah. And I think at that point, you know, when she kind of got him out of the whole, you know, attacking vamp mode, that she just kind of made a decision. Okay. You know what? We're not going to be safe unless all of them are gone. And I think, I really think it's only her friendship for Elena that made her reconsider. But just like she told Stefan, Damon has to change. And I think, she kind of sort of sees a little bit of that change with Damon because honestly, I was thrown off when he apologized.
Yes,
to her.
But I love that. That was, I don't know. That was a really good scene.
But it was so unexpected. So I think that kind of
played. That's the only reason that she saved him out of the fire because she was just going to let him go.
Yeah. And I think it wasn't just that. I think it was the fact that Stefan went in after him. And Elena was going to go after Stefan. And I, you know, when Elena was trying to pull away from Bonnie, Bonnie was like, okay, I have to make a choice. I can either be without the vampires and be without Elena, or I can deal with Elena and these two. And I, you know, I think, you know, like Damon said, she made that choice for Elena.
And they are kind of conscious vampires in that they are not monsters. In that they do make decisions and they're, you know, kind of their human side. It's even Damon. I mean, he's snarky and whatever, but he's not as bad as, say, Isabel or Catherine, who just.
Oh, she was a bitch, wasn't she?
What? She sure was. I mean, poor Alaric.
Oh, I was like, how in the world? She had to have been something like that in her, you know, her prior life. How in the world did he end up with her? Oh, wow. She was, I can't remember.
But she was sweet at the end, though, when she made him forget and she told him she was trying to protect him and she, you know, wish she had never met, blah, blah, blah. She said all those sweet things at the end, but made him forget.
Yeah, but still. No. She was so horrible. But, yeah, so getting back to Bonnie, I really think that that whole episode showing what she could do with the fire and how she was able to, I mean, she manipulated that fire to where the fire still was going, but it literally was working its way around Stefan so he could get to Damon. Mm-hmm. That's powerful magic. So I think that we're going to see a lot more about, you know, of Bonnie and her powers in the next season. And I'm excited because she does that role really well.
She does. Do you think that now with a little bit of her angst or whatever, that she's going to be darker, be, you know, uncaring, and just maybe go on a vampire killing rampage or something? I see a dark path for her.
I disagree. I don't think that she'll go down a dark path because I think her intentions are always it's always with the mindset that she's trying to save human lives.
Okay.
And so in that sense, no, I don't think she'll be dark. I think that the vampires have a lot to fear with her, you know, especially like she said with Damon, if he spills so much as a drop of innocent blood, I'll take him down. I think that she's making a decision between, you know, human lives with souls and vampires who she probably sees as soulless. Mm-hmm. And anyone in that position is automatically pretty much going to go for the humans and try to save them. Because, you know, the humans are really no match for the vampires, not with their speed, not with their strength, the different little powers that they have. So I think she's pretty much going to be more about protecting them than she is, okay, well, there's another vampire, let me go kill you. I don't see that as her. That would be so out of character for her.
Okay. But unless something weird happens and she gets possessed and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but I don't know. I kind of think with her powers now, I don't think that's going to be much possible, honestly. Okay. So I think she just pretty much has put herself in the role as protector, you know, so we'll see how that goes.
Okay. Well, next week, May 13th is the Vampire Diaries finale. Wow. I thought it was going to be this week because there were so many finales this week, but it was a pretty good one. But what was the preview? Did you watch the preview at all?
No, I think that was the finale.
That was the finale?
Yeah, because this, yeah, that was the, yeah, what the 13th.
Today? Today's the 6th. Today, where the hell am I? okay, oops. That was, well, okay, good, because that was really good finale material.
It really was. I mean,
I was like, well, if that's not the finale, then what the hell are they going to do next week?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was one hell of a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm really interested to see where they're going to go with this next. And especially with, I'm really hoping that they do focus more on the Lockwoods this season, because they've been hinting at it since before the winter hiatus. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember, there was an episode where Tyler and Jeremy got into a fight, and Tyler like was really wailing on Jeremy, and you know, everybody was asking him what's wrong, and he says, I don't know. And when he stands up, there's the full moon right behind him.
Oh, okay.
That was when I first knew, okay, they are going to bring the werewolf story into this, you know, into the show. But they've taken so long with dragging it out. I think, you know, just a little bit with his aggression, and then on with the season finale where he was on the ground and the EMTs were looking at him and his eyes were yellow.
Yes.
That's only hints.
So yeah, it's like, so I guess when we said it wasn't really a spoiler. I mean, because anybody can put that together.
Yeah.
He's a werewolf.
Yeah. So we'll just, you know, I'm really interested to see how they're going to do that storyline, and if, you know, how far it's going to be from the book, or if they're going to expand on it a little bit more, because it was a kind of a big thing in the book, but you didn't find out until towards the end of it what he was, and then there was kind of a quick solution for it. So, you know,
I hope they don't wrap that up too fast.
Yeah, I want them to kind of
drag
play
it
that
out a little. Yeah.
See how how it goes.
You know, always with the stories now, if there's vampires, there's going to be witches, and then there's going to be werewolves. And that's just the way it is. And speaking of werewolves, let's, you know, easily transition into True Blood, where their, promotions now have one of their latest 15 minutes pieces is all about a werewolf.
Yes, they have the wares coming in. I'm so excited because, you know, I'm a fan of the books as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the wares play a pretty big part in the whole series. So
True Blood, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to see how this direction goes, because HBO has taken some liberties with the whole Frankhouse story, but all of the things that they've done, I've pretty much enjoyed. You know, their expansion on the whole Fellowship of the Sun, even though it kind of got a bit much at the end, and also with the Marianne storyline, it just kind of, I think, went a little over the top. But
it was funny. It was funny,
yeah. But after a while, I was like, okay.
Wait, no. Marianne. Yeah, no. Marianne went too long. I thought you were talking about Fellowship. Fellowship was really funny. I enjoyed that. Marianne lasted way too long.
Yeah, Fellowship was funny, but towards the end, it just got really, really cheesy.
Yeah, because
it was hard for me. It was hard for me to look at Fellowship of the Sun as a threat to the vampires because Sarah Newland, even though she's cute as a button, she's just so, I don't know, it was just hard to think of her character as being this sunny, you know, having this sunny disposition, yet she's part of this church that's trying to kill vamps, which, you know,
Professor Umbridge.
But she actually had no clue in the show, whereas in the book, she was kind of the protagonist for all of this. So it was kind of weird to see that, but, you know, Fellowship of the Sun is supposed to be like one of the big threats for the vamps. So I hope if they do expand on that storyline a little bit more in season 3, that they kind of rein it in a little bit and make it not so
cheesy.
Silly, I guess is the best.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, they're a bunch of yahoos. They weren't really scary at all. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. So at least until the part where, you know, like towards the end when they were about to, you know, when they had Sookie and when they had Eric and, you know, they were about to kill them or sacrifice or whatever you want to call it, that got a little bit scary. But I think it kind of took them a long time to get there.
Yeah.
So I'm just hoping they kind of do that a little bit better. But the wares, yeah, I'm really excited for this.
Okay. Well, I'm excited about that, too. And then you did a blog post on your site, hmrpotter.com, where you posted 3 webisodes that they have on HBO. And they kind of take place right before. Well, I know the Sookie one kind of took place right before the finale. They were talking about her dress and all these other things. But it was really good to see something we haven't seen before, and to see our characters that we love so much that we haven't seen in like a year.
Yeah, and to see them kind of interact the way that they did, because I think the first webisode was Eric and Pam auditioning.
Oh, that was hilarious.
That was hilarious just with the dancers.
And then, God.
You know, because they allowed people of all you know, talents and
what were they auditioning for?
I guess it was just they were auditioning for a new dancer for the bar.
Okay, that's what I was thinking, but I was like, why would they audition for that? And they just like had crazy people in that line.
And it was so funny because Pam looked amused and Eric looked irritated up until the last one.
Yeah.
And it was that whole episode, you know, that minisode was so funny to me. And then the second one was
Jessica,
you know, and the overzealous preacher man, you know, he was creepy, but it's so funny because he thought at first that she was a sinner in the sense that she was a prostitute. And she was like, no, that's not me. He's like, yes, you harlot and you whore and this, that, and the other. And then when she bared her fangs, he got a little more intimidated and just, you know,
but
her
why
mind.
Why is he, as a preacher, going into some hole in the wall trying to, what is he? I don't understand his approach. Like, you're a holy man, go to a bake sale or something and
Well, no, because here's the thing. With that mindset, a lot of them feel like in order to reach the sinners, you have to go into the devil's den. You have to go to where the sinners are in order to reach them. And, you know, that's, I've actually seen, you know, and heard of a lot of, you know, people of the cloth or ministry people, whatever you want to, you know, however you want to call them, going into places like that. I mean, he was in a casino. And he just looked at her being young, looked at her, you know, her vivaciousness, I guess you can say, and just assumed the wrong thing. Because in that type of environment, you're in a bar, I mean, you're in a casino, there's lots of money, and there's, you know, there's always the stereotype that, okay, like, say if that's Vegas, money, sex, you know, CD business, whatever. And so his whole
pretty woman sitting alone, young, pretty thing. Oh, she's a dirty whore. Like, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, really? She's fishing for business or whatever. And
you call somebody a whore to their face. You think they're going to really want to listen to anything else that you have to say?
Well, I've seen worse. Believe it or not. Yeah. So,
I would have drank him.
I think what she did was so much.
Yeah,
I think
it was.
It showed a lot of more maturity in her character, because last season her character was pretty much the brat up until she started dating Hoyt, and then you start to see a little bit of that humanity with her.
That was such.
And then towards the end, you know, I think she got back into that bratty, selfish nature of hers.
What happened to make that happen when she went to drink from the truckers? Because and Hoyt was the mom, her feeding on the mom, right? Okay,
yeah, yeah. She fed on Hoyt's mom, and that kind of ended that. And I think at that point she was kind of discouraged. So yeah, the season ended. She was, you know, she was feeding on truckers, or you know, just picking up guys or whatever to feed on them. And then now you have this bar. This, you know, this guy is openly insulting her, and she's hungry. She's already, you know, she's already stated at the beginning that she's, you know, she's looking for a good time, but she's not looking for a good time in the way that he's thinking she is. So for her to kind of, you know, to kind of compel him and say, you know, you go home to your wife, you make love to her, you let her know that she is the most important thing to you, yada yada yada, it showed Yeah, but then of course she had to add the little, you know.
Yeah, I got a boner for Jesus.
That, you know, that was fun, because it lets you know, okay, Jessica has matured, but at the same time she still has a little bit of her sense of humor. She has a little bit of her mischievous left. So, yeah, that was fun. The third one was kind of, I don't know, that one I guess you could say kind of disturbed me a little bit more, because it's Sookie and it's Tara, and they're basically fighting about the whole vampire thing, which I find is really funny, because if you look at the season 3 promos, you see that Tara is going to end up with a vampire.
I know, fang banging. What is that? That season 3 promo was off the chain. You had Sookie with Eric and some bearded unnamed guy. You had Bill Compton.
That's Alfie. He's the head wear.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and he turns into, I don't know how they're doing it with the, you know, with the show as far as Sookie's relationships, but in the books, he and Sookie almost had a relationship. It's like the attraction was there and the sexual tension was there, but there were so many different, circumstances that kind of kept them apart, including Alcida's, crazy ex-girlfriend Debbie Pelt, who they are going to have in the show. I'm really excited to see how they do this, because this chick was nuts in the book. Oh. Like, she was certified crazy. So I'm really excited to see how they, you know, develop that relationship. And plus there's the underlying attraction between Sookie and Eric, and then there's the whole Bill is missing thing. I don't know. I think this season is probably going to be the best yet, because they've got so much to work with this season.
I know. I hope they don't have anything that they linger on. And I want more Lafayette in the bar talking crap.
Yes.
I mean, they could just have him. They didn't have to do the whole him in chains underneath the bar. I don't know what that was about. I'm glad they kept him in. But I hated the whole, you know, shrinking Violet type of thing that he was doing where he was scared and all this. I want to see Lafayette talking some crap.
Oh yeah, and you saw in the minisode with Sookie and Tara, he was right there in the background. Yeah. It's 2 cents in, and I loved it.
Yeah, I know. I want more of that. I hope they get back to that, because him second season, he was on shaky ground a little there. You know, I was like, I don't know, dude. But
at least up until he drank from Eric, because that one episode where he got his mojo back and he was doing the dancing and he was talking.
I tell you,
Lafayette has to be responsible for two of my most favorite scenes in the whole show, and it's that one and the AIDS burger clip.
God, everybody loves the AIDS burger. Oh my goodness.
Those two clips are two of the funniest out the whole season, so, you know, I mean, out the whole show, so yes, I hope Lafayette comes back with his 100% fierceness this season, because I need it.
Shoot. Yeah, and so, it's kind of funny to note that everybody was watching Vampire Diaries because they needed something to watch for True Blood. But now that, you know, Vampire Diaries is over, I'm so glad that I have True Blood, because now it's like, oh my God, I can't wait to the new season of Vampire Diaries. Now yes. I really have to wait because I have something, you know, in between. So you have True Blood and Vampire Diaries going back to back, and we will never will be without a vampire show on TV for right now.
Yeah. So and then also the kind of range, because Vampire Diaries is more young adult based, and it's not, you know, it's sexy, but it's not, you know, it's
raunchy,
not
like a True Blood.
True Blood is for the adults who need to have that raunch in their life. And it's so wonderfully done, and it's very tasteful. Even the
tasteful, but you know, it's I like it. I'm not offended by it.
Exactly. So yeah, I love it. So we come out of Vampire Diaries. We only have to wait a couple weeks, and then here we go with True Blood season 3. I think I'm actually going to have a premiere party for True Blood. I've been seriously considering it, and it's like so many of my friends are into True Blood that I didn't know. So I just happened to put a post on Facebook a couple weeks ago. Okay, I'm going to have a True Blood party. Who's coming? I got so many responses. They were like, yes, we'll come and hang out.
Oh, wow.
Like, okay, have to do this.
The You'll only be thing, like the Twi Moms of Twilight.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess, you know, similar to what we do with our Harry Potter parties, but we don't watch the movies while we're at the parties. It's more discussion and games. But, you know, True Blood is only an hour. So, you know, why not?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. Let's get into some Twilight talk right quick. I watched that Oprah episode special, I guess, that they had on Eclipse. And I thought
that was not the cutest thing.
I thought it was cute. That's my first thing in my notes that I have. It was extremely cute. I fell in love with Robert.
You know
day.
What?
I really fell in love with him. He is so adorable.
And you know what? He's always like that. But I think now that they're doing a lot more press and everything, I think that all three of them have matured a lot when it comes to being on camera as far as doing interviews. Because just like Oprah said with Kristen, she's always been kind of shy in interviews, and you could kind of see that in her earlier interviews. She's kind of aloof in some of them, and just kind of like she's not exactly sure what she's doing there. But I think that, you know, as the press and the movies have gone on, and they've been, you know, literally everywhere, their maturity is showing on camera. And I mean, that interview was probably one of the best that I've seen with them. And Kristen's interviews over the last year, when they were promoting New Moon, her interviews have been so much fun to watch, because you can kind of see that she has her guard down now. She's making more jokes and she's being silly, and you know, it's just it was fun to watch. It
That's
was a
good
lot
to
of
see. That is very good to see, and I can kind of tell that she was still a little nervous on there, because I've never really seen her in an interview, but I know that she was a little bit more comfortable. And the media, the you know, entertainment media isn't attacking her and what she wears on the red carpet as much. She's dressing better and people are appreciating that. And so I think she's really, you know, I guess maturing and getting used to everything, like you said before, but it really shows. And I'm glad to see it because, you know, some people are aloof and they are, you know, nervous and stuff, and people take that the wrong way. And it's just kind of sad to see them, you know, kind of treat her that way because they didn't really get that she was nervous and not, you know, a bitch or anything. So,
yeah. And I mean, even with those interviews, I mean, she seems like one of those types that she says what's on her mind, and she's been, like she said, as far as her similarity to Bella, she says what's on her mind and she doesn't apologize for it. Like if she feels, you know, something is crap, she's going to say something is crap. But of course, that's her own opinion. But because she's a star, people think that she's not, I guess that she's not entitled to that kind of opinion. And that's one of the things that's always made me mad about people talking bad about her. You know, they're like, oh, she thinks she's this and she thinks she's that. I'm like, no, she's just she's expressing an opinion. She's doing the same thing that you or I would do. But it's just the fact that because she has the celebrity status attached to it, people look at it as her being, you know, high and mighty or thinking she's better or whatever. And that's really not the case. She's just saying
probably some immaturity, and that's it. I mean, that's it. And that's not a crime.
Exactly. So, yeah. But you know, it's cool. I, you know, I really enjoyed that Oprah special.
That was and Oprah was really, Oprah treats her audience like, I don't know what. Watching that episode, I was like, and people hate her. Why? She sent these stars to screaming women. I mean, just think if you were living in Chicago right now, Hanako. Harry Potter.
Yes.
And Harry Potter, you're known to be a Harry Potter fan. What if she had sent, like, Weasley to your house? You know? She probably would have done that. She probably found out of you, sent Weasley to your house. She'd be on the TV screaming, watching the movie before everyone else. Everybody in that audience.
Because I would die. But yeah, I mean, that was, and it was so much fun to watch their reactions to that.
Yes.
Because I think, you know, when you're around, you know, screaming fans in mass, I think it's a little bit different than when you're like one-on-one with them. And it was just so much fun to see their faces. I mean, Rob turned a nice shade of tomato.
But he seemed to me the most comfortable with it. He let them touch him. He was like really, you know, he hugged everyone. He was just, you know, like, whatever, I'm just here. They didn't, of course, do that with Kristen. I don't think that she was ready for anything like that. But yeah. Taylor, he did his, but he was a little, I don't know, he seemed like he was a little scared.
And I think he probably was with good reason.
Yes!
Those girls were...
He had a mob. He had like 30 to Robert's, you know, house full of maybe 5 or 8, you know?
Yeah. And I think like with Robert also, just the way that he comes across, I mean, he's very nonchalant about everything. I mean, like he said on the show, you realize that, you know, it keeps you from getting a big head because you realize it's not about you. It's about this character that you play, and that kind of helps you stay grounded. And I think he's always been like that. If you go back and look at, like, say, the Harry Potter movies where they do the behind the scenes, you know, the interviews with the stars and stuff, even back then, in his interviews, he's so very non-assuming, you know, he's not like, oh, you know, well, I got to be in this movie or, you know, I'm Edward Cullen. He's always had that kind of non-assuming personality, mm-hmm. which is one of the reasons why I like him so much mm-hmm. as an actor, because he doesn't, you know, he doesn't just assume, okay, because he's now in this huge franchise and playing this character that he's just, you know, that he's the top dog or anything. He doesn't come across that way. Mm-hmm. And it makes it a lot easier to like him and to like his character because you know, that's how he is, you know?
Yeah. So they did not truly answer the question of were they having a relationship or not. They kind of played around that, or did they answer it and I not see it?
Well, from what I understand, there was an article that came out the day before that show aired, and supposedly sources say that they answered the question for her backstage because they didn't really be grilled about it out on the stage, which I think is cool. I mean, me personally, I think if you look at the way they interact with each other, that it's almost fairly obvious that they're dating. But, you know.
I don't know. She seems, I thought maybe she was not into men.
No, I mean, no. Anytime that, even early on, like when she was dating Michael Angarano.
Oh, okay. So she doesn't have, okay.
Yeah, she dated him for quite a while. I think he was her boyfriend from the time she was 15 up until like last year or a couple of years. And it's like from the moment they started doing Twilight, anytime that you see them together in interviews and just even print interviews, you could kind of, at least for myself, that tension was always there. It's like it was. I've never seen anything like it, you know, and that was weird to me because I was like, God, I mean, who can look at those two and see how they react to each other, how they talk to each other and not think that something's going on? There's so much chemistry, you know, and like I said, I know there are some people who absolutely don't see it, but for me, there's so much chemistry with them, which kind of makes them work on screen as well. But I've always seen it from like go. So if they are dating, good for them. If they're not, okay, people leave them alone.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be reading People magazine when the wedding pictures come out.
Nice. Dakota Fanning.
I think they would make a cute couple though. If they aren't dating,
too obvious. It's like, oh, they were in the movie together. Now they're dating. Boring. I don't know.
Yeah, that's how a lot of people are, but I mean, they together they make an attractive couple. They both, you know, they both are beautiful people, and it looks good. It looks good, but we'll see.
All right, Dakota Fanning, she is 16.
Did I hear that right? I believe
she
reads is
like a 25-year-old. My God, when she said she was 16, I did not believe it. But yeah. I don't know why I don't believe it, because she was just a kid like yesterday, you know, and so, she just grew up a little fast, and I don't know.
And you know, I wouldn't even say that. I kind of, like Oprah was saying, I don't think it was that she grew up fast. She has a very mature quality to herself, you know, and listening to her talk, I mean, she's, like she said, she's been in the business since she was six, so I would think that she has to have a certain, you know, sense of maturity, but she seems very down to earth
and confident. There is not a insecure bone in that woman's body.
No, and she, you know, I've read reports where in between movies she goes to regular high school. She's on the cheering squad, and you know, she lives a regular life outside the movies. And I think that's probably one of the things that keeps her grounded. She's not out doing all these parties and, you know, being the social butterfly like all these other teen stars who are screwing up their careers, you know. She seems really, really grounded.
Well, let's hope she stays that way and doesn't like reach 20 and goes crazy like some of those stars do.
Yeah, because I would hate to see her become another Lindsay Lohan or
God. Well. Wow, that's such a downer. Okay, I got a question. So if Oprah could send someone to your door, who would you want?
Oh, it'd have to be someone from the Potter series. Definitely. And at this point, I don't care who. I would really like Rupert Grint, but if she sent anyone, I would not care.
I was thinking about that too, because like there's not really anybody that I jump up and scream and turn red for. But I was like, maybe Christopher Eccleston, the original Doctor. I mean, the original new Doctor, and maybe Avery Brooks. But I don't know if anybody else. I just have to see, because I'm just so, I don't know, jaded or something. But it's
and you know, it's so funny because you think that about yourself, and then because let me tell you, as much as I am a Harry Potter fan, you know, I like Tom Felton, you know, I kind of sort of like Draco Malfoy, but I considered myself like a fangirl. And when he was here at Dragon Con last year, I stood in line to get his autograph and my hand started shaking. I was
Shut
like,
up.
like, this is not happening to me. And it's so funny because, of course, when you meet them, all of the Potter actors that I have been able to meet have been the nicest people on the planet. I mean, they're so humble. They're so down to earth. And, you know, they sit there and they talk to you and it's just like, you know, talking to the neighbor or something. They're really, you know, down to earth. And then we had to, you know, when we went to do our photo op, me and my daughters, oh, we're all shaking and like, I did not expect to be fangirling over Tom Felton. I'm like, he plays Draco. He's not a Gryffindor. Oh my God. Yeah.
I love his bleach blonde hair thing that he has going. I love that guy. He's the one that I'm most excited about. He's my favorite Potter character.
Oh my God. You know,
and we're not going to talk about how he was cheesed up in the photo with him all hugged up.
I'm telling
That's
you,
a great picture. That picture is great.
My reaction to him was completely unexpected. Because I'm like, he's Draco. He's the one who gives Harry and Ron a hard time. And, you know, Ron is my heart. Ron is my favorite character. And, you know, Draco gives him the hardest time. So, of course, I like Tom Felton's portrayal of Draco. But Draco as a character, I'm like, oh, no, he's always messing with the Weasleys. I don't like him. So my reaction to him was just completely just, it was retarded. I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe I'm freaking out over. Yeah, it was weird.
That is so
it was
funny.
Weird, but it was fun. It was a lot of fun meeting him.
So speaking about Potter, give us an Infinitus update. You're still going?
Yes, I am going. I'm actually presenting a panel with my friend Kat. We're
not me. But another cat.
No, not you. My friend Kat here, local friend, one of my other, she's like my, I guess you could say my best Harry Potter friend. Mm-hmm. She's the one that I go do all my thrift store trolling with. And
oh, God.
You know, she's the one who actually got me into collecting, too. So thank you, Kat. I'm a lot broker because of you. But so she and I are actually going to be doing a panel at Infinitus.
What is it called?
It's called Potterholics Non-Anonymous, it's basically we're going to talk about Atlanta HP, which is our local meetup group here, and we're going to talk to people who, you know, are at other cities and have always said, okay, well, I like Harry Potter, but I don't know anyone who's into Harry Potter. Just kind of give them some tools on starting a meetup group, you know, the games that we play, kind of the discussions, you know, how we find people, you know, who are fans and want to meet other fans but don't know, you know, don't quite know how. So, you know, it's just basically going to be, a Potter, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous for Potter fans.
That is funny.
But of course, we don't care to be anonymous. We're proud of our addiction and we want to shout it to the world. So yeah,
hilarious.
I'm looking forward to doing it. I hear that there's probably over 1,500 people that are registered for Infinitus. So I'm a bit overwhelmed. I've never been to a con. A specific con that big before. I mean, Dragon Con is huge, but for people on that scale to be, you know, at a con for just one particular fandom, I've never done that before because the only other specific fandom con that I've done was Icon for Supernatural, and that, I think that topped out at like 500 people. So this is going to be, you know, parents, children.
And it's the opening of the theme park, right?
It's not the opening. It'll be a month afterwards.
Oh, okay.
But Infinitus attendees have an option to purchase a special ticket, which allows access to the park during the day on Friday. But then once the park closes, we also get after hours access and special things. I think they'll be doing some kind of tour and we'll have food. And it's going to be really exciting. So I'm looking forward to that. I mean,
what day is that again for the listeners?
Infinitus takes place July 15th through the 18th. Okay. The park event will be on Friday the 16th.
Okay.
So, but you have to be an Infinitus attendee in order to get the special park ticket. It's called Night of a Thousand Wizards. So you have to be an attendee. And the information can be found on the website, and it's www.infinitus2010.org.
That is awesome. Woo! Well, Hanukkah, we've been at it for an hour.
Wow, time flies.
Having fun. I know. Well, we'll have links to everything that we talked about on the show. You can see that at scifipartyline.com. You can give us a call on our voicemail at 773-336-2686. And you can contact us on Twitter, and that is at Sci-Fi Party Line. And where can we reach you, Hanukkah?
My blog is Confessions of a Grown-Up Fangirl, and that's at hmrpotter.com. I can also be found on Twitter at the same name, HMR Potter.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
I rose above the noise and confusion, just to get a glimpse beyond this illusion. I was soaring ever higher, but I flew too high. Though my eyes could see, I still was a blind man. Though my mind could think, I still was a madman. I hear the voices when I'm dreaming. I can hear them say, you cry.